everyone. It is Adam. Welcome back to Bringing It Backwards, a podcast where both legendary and rising artists tell their own personal stories of how they achieve stardom. On this episode, my brother-in-law Sean Olbs of the Eiffels had a chance to chat with Rollo Tomasi over Zoom video. Sean talks to Rollo Tomasi about where they grew up and how they got into music, how the band formed, some highlights of the band's career, and all about their new record called Where Myth Becomes Memory. You can watch the interview with Rollo Tomasi on our Facebook page and YouTube channel at Bringing It Backwards. It'd be awesome if you subscribe to our channel, like us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at Bringing Back Pod. And if you're an Amazon shopper, a portion of your everyday purchases will help support our podcast with just a few clicks. It's super easy. Please head over to our website, bringingitbackwards.com, and click on Amazon each time you begin your purchases. Those few extra clicks will help keep our mission of providing a platform for both legendary and rising artists to tell their personal stories on how they achieve stardom so that all artists and music enthusiasts have access to meaningful and memorable advice that will help inspire their own musical journeys. To recap, please head over to bringingitbackwards.com and click on Amazon before you make each and every purchase, because a portion of that purchase will add up in a big way to help support our mission. Thank you so much.
We'd appreciate your support if you follow and subscribe to our podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
We're Bringing It Backwards with Rollo Tomasi.
All right, everybody. We got James from Rollo Tomasi here today, and he's joining us all the way from the UK. How's it going, James?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm great. So tell me, man, how did you get into music to begin with?
I've been playing instruments and been encouraged to be involved with music probably since I was about 5 or 6 years old. I come from a musical family, I suppose. My dad played in bands like punk and mod bands back in the day. My mum encouraged me and my sisters to get piano lessons when we were younger. It was something that she'd always wanted to do herself, but hadn't had the opportunity to do it. So I think she was really, really keen that that we do something like that, because it was something that she was able to kind of outsource for us and provide for us. So yeah, the family that I was in, we were always encouraged to play musical instruments. I remember the radio always being on at home. And then I suppose eventually, in terms of what took me on like the path to like the kind of music that our band plays, I remember hearing Blink-182 on the radio and being desperate to pick up an electric guitar. At the time, I'd been learning sort of classical guitar on just an acoustic. So that was like sort of a bit of a watershed moment for me. And that kind of put me on a slightly different path. And this would have been when I was maybe like 11 or 12. I saw my first concert around that time, maybe 12 or 13. I saw Muse play a huge show. Well, at the time, it was huge for them in a town near to where I live. And that's it. Like I was in from that point. It really bitten and got the bug. And from that moment, kind of my life was about being in bands, like wanting to write music, wanting to play shows. And yeah, that's kind of what set me on the journey, I suppose.
Yeah, well, I'm actually in San Diego right now. So you're talking about a couple hometown boys with the Blink-182. Do you remember what album or what record it was?
It was Enema of the State. Yeah, okay. That was the one that just totally did it for me. And, you know, I think I was the kind of fan where as soon as I'd heard about something, I would want to read interviews with the band, check out the thanks list on, you know, inside the album, see what bands that they were talking about. And I was just a real sponge for all of it. Like I would kind of check out any band that I like mentioned. I would listen to the bands that they were touring with. I would just be really sort of fanatical about it and just wanted to learn and listen to as much as I could at that point.
Yeah, it's crazy because they were, you know, when that record came out, they were obviously one of, if not, you know, the top pop punk band of the time and that era. But it's crazy to see Travis Barker now working with all of these cats. And you can just hear the Blink influence in everything that's coming out right now in this kind of pop punk resurgence that you're seeing right now. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, I suppose in terms of the point in their career that I heard that record, I think they'd probably already they were already huge at that point, but like as someone that was like 11 or 12, like I hadn't really heard anything that sounded like that before. Right. I remember the radio station that I heard it on over here was like, it was like Radio 2. It was like an evening show. And that's like, that's the station that my mum would listen to. So looking back on it, I should have already realized that it maybe wasn't like the coolest or most credible thing to be listening to. But like, you know, it just really sort of captured my imagination, I suppose. And
sure. You know, back I had a similar experience with getting into rock. I think, you know, some friends and I started listening to pop punk and then one day you kind of realized, oh, wait, maybe this isn't, you know, the cool, you know, when you're a teenage guy and you're trying to be a tough guy, you know, and then all of a sudden you're like, oh, this isn't as tough as I want to be right now. And then you start listening to some harder stuff, some stuff that sounds a little bit more like Rollo Tomasi or Dillinger Escape Plan and some of these influences of yours. But yeah, I saw Muse when they were on their way up, not, you know, they're playing like stadiums now and all that. And it was one of the, I still say it was one of the best shows I've ever seen. They're amazing.
Yeah. And I've great memories of watching them play. Like, I think this would have been when they were touring Origin of Symmetry. So they were still like sort of relatively early on, but definitely destined for something bigger. And like within a couple of years, you know, I was going to music festivals over here and they were headlining them to like, you know, 30,000 plus crowds and things like that. And again, I've got great memories of watching them play. I think like in terms of really putting on a show and it not just being, you know, people playing in a sweaty club, like I have a lot of time for that. And it's something that I've kind of grown to like a lot more having toured so much. You know, sometimes you do want something more. You want a production, like you want something sort of visually stimulating to look at as well as listen to. And Muse definitely were kind of really pushing that early on when I think back to it and watching them play.
Right. So you start listening to rock music and you're getting into it. And tell me how you formed, you know, your quintet, your band of Rollo Tomasi.
So we would have been in high school at the time and we were playing the five of us that formed the band were playing in two other bands at the time. This didn't sound really anything like it. It was kind of more, we'd sort of graduated from pop punk onto post-hardcore, like at this period of time, like Thursday and Thrice and At the Drive-In, that was kind of what we were into. And then eventually, like, I suppose it just keeps snowballing and you want to find something, like you're saying, that's just the toughest thing, the more extreme kind of thing. And at that point, yeah, we started listening to like Botch, the Dillinger Escape Plan, the Locust. And I suppose we just wanted to do something that was more, it was more true to what we were listening to. And these two bands that we've been in had kind of like reached their natural conclusions, I would say. Like, I think around 16, 17, you know, certain people just kind of didn't want to do it. And the rest of us were a bit more keen on pursuing it. So we kind of, came together. Like I said, we were all at school still, like everyone was from the same sort of villages, not even city. We're from like kind of really small villages outside of the city of Sheffield. And we were just really lucky to all know each other, be in the same year and classes at school and to kind of have the same sort of passion and drive to do it. So we just started rehearsing. We started working on some music. We recorded a demo pretty much immediately. And we just sat out with the plan of just playing and trying to get out of Sheffield where we were. Like the bands we'd done before that had never done anything other than locally. So we set it as our goal that we just wanted to go and play shows. And I think we were kind of lucky that this was all around the time that things with MySpace Music was really kicking off and that bands could really use that as a vehicle to sort of self-promote and get out there. And we just took advantage of it. I think the first seven shows we did were all in different cities and we just kind of got out there and started playing, started meeting people, meeting like-minded bands, promoters. And again, it just kind of, we just had this momentum from there and it's sort of started laying the foundations for what would be like the beginnings of our career, if you can call it that.
Yeah. Did you and your sister always get along and like the same music? And, you know, obviously you're in a band together now. So it's interesting because, you know, growing up with a sibling, sometimes you don't always get along, but you know, have created this awesome band with your sister, kind of co-singing with you. So tell me a little bit about how that's been.
I mean, look, I'd be lying if I said that we didn't kind of have those clashes that all siblings do have. I think it's natural. It's gonna happen. But in terms of a working relationship and like sort of musical touch points, I suppose we're quite lucky that we're only 18 months apart. So like there was just one school year between the two of us. We had a lot of similar, we had the same circle of friends. We liked the same music. I think we both kind of went into our own sort of niches with like really specific stuff. But for the most part, like we liked all of the same things. I think when Eva was really keen to be involved when we started doing Rolo, like she'd actually played bass and sang in a previous band that we did. And she just really wanted to be a part of it. I think it was, you know, we felt that there was this community that existed of the bands that we liked and were going to see play. And we wanted to be in that and feel like we were part of something. So yeah, it was easy in terms of like, you know, creative things that we agreed on, and the sort of direction we wanted to go with music. Like we absolutely agreed on all of that. And I think over the years, yeah, we've had a really, really great relationship with the band being sort of a big part of it.
So you were saying that MySpace was instrumental in kind of getting some of your momentum going. Would because you guys have toured with some epic bands. So tell us a little bit about how you went from, you know, just, you know, playing around with some of your friends to actually building some of that momentum. I know you mentioned MySpace. Were there any other kind of key moments that you felt helped get the ball rolling with you guys?
I mean, I think we were lucky in that when we were all based in Sheffield, really early on, I was introduced to a club promoter that was like all the stuff that we liked was going through that club. And we were fortunate that we got a lot of really great opening slots with that. I think we were fortunate that even at an early age, like we were organized and, you know, if I'm allowed to say it, like we're a good band. And, you know, I think that got recognized and we really fitted a bunch of bills that that would come through. So we got these opportunities to go out and to play. And we got some really great support slots really early on as well. There was a band from Sheffield called 65 Days of Static, a kind of like electronic-y post-rock kind of band. And really fortunately at the time, a job that I had, I was working in like a clothing shop just on a Saturday. So I think I was about 16 or 17. And one of the people from that band worked in a shop next to it. And we kind of got talking and, you know, I was like, oh, here's our demo sort of thing. And they took us out and gave us a really big opportunity to go and play like what was the biggest tour we'd done at the time. And I think there's a lot of these things that were sort of, it seems like luck and it seems like chance, but I think it was the work that we'd done that we put ourselves in a position to create those opportunities. And yeah, I mean, timing is everything with things like that, you know. Eventually it did reach a point where I suppose we were doing enough and we were busy enough that we kind of got the attention of like an actual booking agent. And from that, you know, from the work that we'd maybe put in ourselves and the sort of DIY led touring that we'd done, we had enough of a sort of CV or like a touring history that people wanted to work with us. They kind of felt and saw that it was going somewhere. And from that, it led to some great opportunities.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, you guys have played with Faith No More, Biffy Clyro, Dillinger Escape Plan, The Bronx. I love The Bronx. I love a lot of those bands that I just mentioned. Do you have a favorite as far as some of those bigger bands that you played with?
I mean, playing with Dillinger was literally a dream come true. I think they were one of the bands where if I hadn't have heard, you know, Calculating Infinity, I don't think our band would sound the way that it does, maybe even not be a band. So getting to do that, literally getting to share a stage with Heroes was just, it's just something else. I've not really got words for it. Like, it was a very, very special moment.
Hell yeah. Tell us how you connected with Diplo, because I know that you worked with him, but I don't really know the story.
Yeah, so this is back in 2009. There is a producer from the UK called Mum Dance. He was friends with Diplo, introduced Diplo to our music. Again, it was just MySpace at this point. He sent him a MySpace link. We were playing South by Southwest in Texas that year. Diplo came and watched us. He couldn't get into where we were playing because it was busy. He had to sit on some bins and watch, so as the story goes. And then we kind of hear about it because he mentions our name, I think, in a Pitchfork interview. Like it was something like a band that everyone should be listening to, but they don't know about right now. And he was like, oh yeah, my friend put me onto this band. So we got in touch and asked him if he wanted to do a remix, because that was kind of, I mean, I'll hold my hands up at this point. I didn't know it was. I did a bit of research and looked into it and was like, oh, well, you know, definitely a big name. Maybe he'll want to do a remix for us. We'd like
different scene, right?
Right, different scene. It only really took an ex-girlfriend of mine who I was with at the time to kind of explain to me what like a big name he was, and be like, this is really serious. Like you need to kind of really pursue this. There might be something really cool that can happen here. So we got in touch and asked if they want to do a remix. And then the reply was, well, what are you doing for your next album? And it just went from there. Like he asked his, you know, manager asked us what we were doing for that. And we ended up having to kind of work to his schedule with it. Because he was super busy at the time. He was really in demand. But yeah, we went out and we made a record in Los Angeles over the course of 3 weeks. And it still stands up as being one of the most memorable things we've ever done. It was a really, really cool experience.
Yeah, that's exciting. How did that differ to your recording processes prior to that?
So I think prior to that, we would go in just with an engineer. You know, we would have written the songs and the songs were good to go. And we would just be going in and just someone would record it. I think producers and engineers, sort of what they are, is very separate things. It's something that I only realized kind of after making this record. I think one thing that he was very good with and that he'd obviously done a lot of work with prior to us was sort of coaching Eva with vocals and things like that. I mean, obviously he'd worked a lot with artists like MIA and a lot of, you know, the other female vocalists. So that kind of touch was really great on that as well at the time. And as well, you know, he was just, as a producer, he brought in a really good team of people to help engineer the record, picked an amazing location for us to do it. And yeah, I mean, we saw him like a couple of years after doing the record and he just kind of went stratospheric after that. It was, yeah. You know, it's really, really funny. Like, you know, we got home and he was the face of BlackBerry. Like he was adverts everywhere. And I was kind of, you know, trying to explain to my mum who he was. And it was like, okay, you see that BlackBerry advert there? That's the guy that we've just been and recorded with. Like, it was quite funny, really. But yeah, not seen or heard from him for a very, very long time.
Right. So it was kind of your first experience, regardless of how big he was, but of actually working with a real producer, it sounds like.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And it's something that we've done more and more over the years. And like definitely something that we've kind of warmed to as an idea. I think when I was younger, I was really protective over what we were doing and maybe quite proud and didn't really feel like we needed help. But more and more with the last couple of records, I know that the best results we've had have been when we've been open to collaboration and to suggestions. And yeah, it was a good lesson in terms of that, definitely.
Sure. So tell us about the new record, because I know this will be coming out, at least last I heard, early next year. Is that still when you're expecting it to drop it?
Yeah, so the release date that we have at the moment is February 4th. It's an album called When Myth Becomes Memory. It was recorded at the beginning of this year. It's actually our sixth studio album. So we've kind of fast forwarded quite a bit through from album two with Diplo to album six, just kind of to give a bit of context. But yeah, it's something that we're really, really pleased with. It's been strange having to sit on it for so long. Like this is the longest amount of time that we've ever had passed between recording an album and then releasing it. Sure. Obviously, you know, there's really easy things to point to as to why that's been the case. There's been a pandemic happening. We wanted to make sure that we could play some shows around the release of the record.
Sure.
But it's been good in a way. It's meant that we can kind of make sure we have everything ready. We've shot some music videos that we're really happy with. A couple of those are out already. There's going to be another single in January with the last video that we've done. But yeah, we are just really, really raring to go and to get back to playing. I think after, you know, the last couple of years, it's been the longest amount of time in my life that I went without playing a show since I was like 13. And as someone that, you know, really thrives on that, it felt like a long time.
Yeah. No kidding. Yeah. I mean, you're not alone in that. I think pretty much all musicians have been in that boat. So do you find that that extra time gave you extra time to kind of tweak things and make sure things were in place with this music and maybe do some last minute changes or add extra elements as far as visuals or anything like that? Or do you feel like you finished it and then you were just kind of sitting on it and like, I'm waiting until this and maybe working on the next thing?
Definitely while we were recording, I think there were certain things afterwards where we, maybe with vocals, it was good that there wasn't any immediate pressure there to reach a deadline. I know that, so Eva recorded the vocals separately from the rest of us. She actually lives in the US now, and because of logistics at the time and the COVID restrictions that were in place, she recorded it separately. And while she was at, you know, this is just an example, while she was doing her vocals, there was like a really bad snowstorm where she was. So, you know, she had to delay and things like that. And it was good having the time there for that, because it meant that, you know, she was able to go back and do things. But I think we had to kind of find that balance between being relaxed and taking advantage of having a bit more time, and also still like knowing when to call something finished. I think you can go in indefinitely and make changes, and
yeah,
it won't necessarily lead to better results. I think you end up maybe sometimes obsessing over things that you're not going to notice when you listen to it 5 years down the line. But yeah, I mean, it was good in terms of being able to write the record with less pressure on. And yeah, I think ultimately it was a really nice recording experience, just because after, you know, what was an unusual year for everyone, to go back to something that was incredibly familiar and to have a really nice experience in the studio with a producer, Lewis Johns, who we've done the last few records with, and it feel really sort of, I'm reluctant to say the word, but normal. It was good. It was really, really nice.
Right. So if you haven't heard any of the new Rolo stuff, check out Dripper Cloaked, right? Those are your two newest singles.
Yeah, that's right.
So you can catch those on Spotify. James, thanks so much for stopping by and telling us about Rolo. We like to end the show by asking, if you had one piece of advice for aspiring artists, what would it be?
Before you go on tour, always change your bed sheets. Nothing is better than coming back to fresh sheets.